This is David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Lie down all in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole Variety Hour, your source for radically democratic news, views, reviews, and interviews, stories of ordinary and extraordinary people working to root down the oppressive institutions of capitalism. That's the Old Mole Variety Hour, Monday mornings at 9.
KBOO Community Radio is now on Venmo. Follow us and send a donation anytime at KBOO Radio. That's at KBOO Radio. Thanks.
KBOO.
Good evening. You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. My name is Emma, and I use she and her pronouns.
This is Sheila, and I use she and her also.
Great. Well, welcome everyone to Transpositive. Tonight we're going to be talking about current events in the news as they relate to the transgender community and other topics of interest. So first, let's just kind of do a check-in. Sheila, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing fine. And I had some thoughts tonight about gender dysphoria and what this impact of that particular term means to our community and to our ability to communicate our reality to the non-trans group of people that are determining so many aspects of our lives right now.
And I'm really interested in talking about what's going on all around the country right now as it relates to transgender issues. And I'd like to start with the Supreme Court ruling, which has much broader implications than just the transgender community, but it definitely affects the transgender community specifically. So, but first, let's just do a check-in and see how we're both doing. What's going on with you, Sheila? How's your life going?
It's going really good. I'm bringing out a new edition of the transgender book that I wrote in 2016, and it should be available on Amazon and also on Barnes & Noble sometime within about the next 2 weeks. It's called Transsexualism and Its Discontents, and it is a profile of the times that I lived through as an older trans person, and deals largely with also topical issues of interest to the community, and also with some of the issues that affect us in later life as we age. And so when I wrote the book, I intended it to be an entire field study of everything that I had ever experienced or knew about transsexualism. And I used the old term because I wanted to be sufficiently narrow that I didn't have to deal with more peripheral issues to the wider trans community. So it's a little bit more specific in that way, but that's my most exciting news right now.
Oh, great. My news is we're starting to organize for the Transgender Day of Remembrance Interfaith Vigil which we do every year in November. And we've picked a location. We're going to organize it this year at the, I think it's called the First United Methodist Church, over in Goose Hollow. So that's where we'll be doing the vigil this year. And it's an interfaith vigil that we do with members of the different faith communities come together for the vigil. And we acknowledge and honor the lives of people who have been lost to us in the last year. So we're starting to organize for that. So we usually start every year in the late summer. So that's kind of what's going on with me. So I'd like to start, Sheila, first by talking about, it's almost a month past due now, but we didn't have a chance to do a show about this because the second week of July, we did a show with the Pride Northwest, Deborah Porta, because we just had the Pride Festival here in Portland about 2 weeks ago, and it was really great. We had the Trans March happen again this year, the Dyke March, of course, the big Pride Parade on Sunday, that was huge, and then the Waterfront was huge this year too. So we did a show about the Pride Festival, and then last week we actually did a show with another transgender author, somebody who's writing a book called I think A Trans Journey Through Time or something like that, and it's about transgender trailblazers from the first half of the 20th century, and it's a really good book. So I'll definitely send you a link to it, Sheila, in case you're interested in reading another book about transgender history. Before all that happened, on June 30th, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of a web designer named Lori Smith, who cited that her Christian beliefs against gay marriage should allow her to reject anyone who has requested assistance with their website design. And there was a ruling of 6-3 against in favor of her and against the idea that somebody who's gay could ask someone who's Christian to design a website for them. I mean, it's not quite that specific, but it was there's this thing though about the ruling. So this is kind of based in there was also a case about 5 years ago. It was the famous cupcake case where somebody didn't want to make cupcakes for a gay wedding, and they brought it to the Supreme Court. And at that time, the Supreme Court ruled that you couldn't discriminate against someone, you know, who was gay just because they came to you and asked you to make a cake for them. So, yeah, that was the Masterpiece Cake Shop. But this ruling that happened on June 30th basically said that yes, you can discriminate against gay people and lesbians and of course transgender people too, and you don't have to make a website for them. So that was the ruling, but the thing about the ruling is that, well, there are a couple of things about the ruling. So one thing about the ruling is that the origin of the ruling was based on this idea that somebody had filled out a form on the website for this Christian website designer based out of Colorado. They'd filled out her website and had asked them to you know, design something for them, and they were gay. But it turns out that nobody actually, there weren't actually any gay people that filled this out. This was actually probably filled out by someone who was just filling it out as a, it was kind of like a trigger. So they just filled out this website and, oh, you know, this is a clear violation of this person's religious freedom, and so let's see what we can do with the case. So it was kind of problematic from that perspective, because I mean, I don't honestly understand how this case could be accepted. But what did you follow that case at all?
I didn't read the opinion, but what I did understand from some newscasts was that there was some question of whether this was an actual case or controversy as opposed to something speculatively that might come up. Courts don't like to deal with things that are speculative. They demand that there be an actual opposition of interest between two contending parties. So if that was absent, normally that also creates what's called a standing problem. So again, just judging by the newscast, so I can't state without having read the opinion definitively, but just in general, there's usually a problem if there's no standing to sue. And the other question, though, is whether this was a religious freedom case or whether this was a free speech case. I think the idea was that if this is a design process, that involves artistry and creativity and therefore falls within the grounds of speech. And so regardless of whether a person was refusing to do it on the grounds of religion, as opposed to just saying as part of our free speech is that I don't want as the to have someone say, essentially put words into my mouth. So this is why it's so important to read opinions. The problem is that everything in life has a little bit of artistry involved in it. What if you were a chef in a restaurant and you said, well, the type of I really try to adapt my cooking to my client, and so if I have a gay couple coming in there and I imply that this is some beautiful dessert that I make for lovers or something, and now I'm serving it to these two men or these two women, that's interfering with my expressive freedom, and besides, I think it violates my religion. And so my own thought is that the primary functions of religion are worship and liturgy and belief. But when it involves public conduct, it seems like you can imagine if different religions had conflicting views of what's permissible, all kinds of people could be refused service. Some people might say, this violates some norm. And the Supreme Court cannot choose between different religions to say your dogmas are more sacred than these dogmas. So the problem when it comes to public accommodations is just how far does the general public have to accommodate particular religious views when they're in every other way, it looks as though the establishment is open without having any rules. In other words, if you're a member of the public, it's a place of public accommodation, the assumption is you need to be served. So there has to be a nexus. And if that nexus is not to be found, or if it's going to conflict depending upon the restaurant owner, people would essentially, the whole concept of something open to the public disappears. And what happens is we're open to segments of the population. Well, that might work within the church building itself, where they'd say, well, we don't want people that are not going to worship according to our norms, because this is what we do here at the church. I could understand a zone of great protection there, but would we have that same thing in a restaurant or in a hotel? For instance, there's rules against fornication. What if everybody had to prove that they were married when they came into to have a single room in a hotel? What if they had to bring their marriage certificate along for fear that they were going to be somehow violating a person's religious norms? That the hotel owner says, well, you're asking me to subsidize fornication. It's against my religion. I've got to see that marriage certificate. What would the Supreme Court do with something like that?
So in this case was called 303 Creative LLC versus Elena's. And in this case, the website designer named Lori Smith claimed that a gay man named Stuart requested his services for help with his upcoming wedding. Now, here's the problem with the case, first of all. I mean, aside from the ruling, which is clearly, it's clearly a political ruling, but the main problem is that this man named Stuart wasn't gay, and he didn't fill out the form. So probably what happened was somebody from the
Alliance Defending Freedom.
You know, every time I hear that name, I'm reminded of that Star Trek episode. Do you remember that episode of Star Trek where, like, Captain Kirk and, like, Lieutenant Uhura and all them, they go in the transporter and they get transported into, like, the opposite universe where, like, everybody's evil. And suddenly, like, Spock has a beard. You know, he has an evil beard. And Uhura is dressed, like, really hot and everything. And, you know, like, they're all, like, they're on this evil starship Enterprise where, like, everybody's evil and all they want to do is, like, destroy the universe. And it's, like, when I hear the group called the Alliance Defending Freedom or whatever that group is called, it's, like, I think that's exactly what they are. They're, like, the exact opposite of the ACLU. They're, like, this organization that basically just wants to, like, destroy the rights of everything that we value and that we cherish about this country, and they want to replace it with, like, this evil, you know. And this is just one of the examples of their handiwork. I mean, they're behind so much of the ADL is behind so much of the legislation attacking transgender youth. I mean, they've been sponsors of so many pieces of legislation attacking transgender youth that have been passed in conservative states, including Florida. But the problem with this case is that there was no gay man named Stuart who filled out this form, which is the whole basis of the Supreme Court case that went all the way to the Supreme Court. And apparently it didn't bother, you know, it didn't bother any of the justices who voted in favor of Lori Smith. It didn't seem to bother any of them that this wasn't actually based on anything that happened in reality. So that's the first
problem. Courts don't like to give advisory opinions. They don't like to deal with hypotheticals. The doctrine of ripeness says that you have to wait until a certain actual, you know, a certain, if you think about every human action from brushing your teeth to doing anything else, there's a certain point at which, you know, you say, at what point does it matter? Is it when you're putting the toothpaste on the toothbrush, or is it when the toothbrush finally enters your mouth? Is it when you first start moving it up and down in your teeth? Well, it's a little like that in life. It's like there's preliminary steps, and then there's a certain step where finally the two parties are in opposition, not just theoretically, but in actual fact, in real time. That's when courts like to move in on a thing. So,
right.
Without reading the opinion, I can't.
Apparently, the Supreme Court loves to make exactly those kind of decisions. I mean, that seems to be one of their favorite things to do. So, you know, because that's exactly what they did here. They made a decision based on something that didn't really exist. So they just kind of, I mean, they didn't make it up, but, you know, the plaintiffs who brought the case, they made it up. And everybody who was pushing this suit knew it was fake, and they still let it go through because they have a political agenda. I mean, they want to get rid of abortion. They want to get rid of gay rights. They probably want to get rid of contraception. They want to get rid of civil rights. You know, they want to push back everything that happened in the 20th century. They want to push it all back. They want to push women back into, you know, into being barefoot and pregnant at home. And they want to erase gay people, all gay people, not just trans people. They want to erase all gay people from public life. And they want to, you know, I mean, they want to restore everything that happened before the idea of separation of church and state became such an important issue in the 20th century. So it's like, this is their goal. And they're, you know, they're bringing in cases 1 year after that because they think that in 20 years, they're going to do it. They think they're going to have a revolution and they're going to like erase all the progress of the 20th century and basically bring us back to the 19th century. So anyways, that's just, so that's the first problem. Of course, the second problem with it is that it basically says that you can discriminate against someone based on your religious orientation, whatever it is. So if you're this gives license. So if you're a pharmacist, you don't have to give transgender people hormones anymore. You don't have to sell anybody condoms. You know, if somebody comes in and they want to buy some condoms, you don't have to sell them. You could say, oh, I'm a Christian. I don't believe in condoms. You know, condoms are evil. They're against my religion. You don't have to let anybody rent. You can deny people housing now because you could say, oh, I don't rent to, you know, those kind of people because that offends my religion. You know, so I'm not going to do that. And it basically gives a free license to bigots and to people who want to discriminate on the basis of their religion, license in all areas of private life to discriminate against basically anyone that they don't like. You know, I mean, they may not like you because of your sexual orientation. Maybe they won't like you because of the color of your hair, the color of your skin, you know, where you're from, whatever. If it offends your religion, now they're basically saying, well, that's okay. Your religion says, you know, that certain people are less than other people. And so, you know, that's okay for you to discriminate now against those people because that's what your religion says, you know, which of course, and of course the most ironic thing of all is that, you know, anybody who knows anything about religious traditions, that's actually the opposite of what it says. Like the religious tradition actually tells you that you're supposed to love and accept people and that you're supposed to welcome them in. I mean, that's actually what the religious tradition teaches. The religious tradition was the foundation of the civil rights movement in this country. And now these bigots on the Supreme Court are turning it on its head. And they're saying, oh, you can discriminate on the basis of religion. You can repeal civil rights laws. You know, you can discriminate against gay people on the basis of religion, which is exactly the opposite of the message that religion is trying to teach people. I just find it so ironic. Anyways, So that's that. That was 303 Creative LLC versus Elena's, which of course is going to affect transgender people all over the place.
So now let's look at this piece by piece. Certainly the Supreme Court is our supreme arbiter of, you know, what our values are as a society. And so I always try to give the Supreme Court the deference that it deserves because of its position. Now, the people that bring cases before the Supreme Court, that's another question. They are oftentimes represented by other organizations, and the Alliance Defending Freedom is one of those.
I don't agree one of with those associations. I don't agree with you. Amy Coney Barrett, Brett Kavanaugh, I mean, these people do not deserve the respect that you say the Supreme Court deserves. Clarence Thomas. These people do not deserve respect. I'm sorry. These were political appointments. It's a kangaroo court right now. These were overtly political appointments done against due process. You know, if we are following due process and the Supreme Court was actually being treated with the deference and the respect that it deserves, then our Attorney General would be sitting on the Supreme Court right now.
What we've got going on our side right now is we seem to have the sympathy of most people. Most people look at transgender people and they are not pleased when transgender people are thrown out of schools or not addressed by the proper pronouns. That is not what most people believe anymore. Now, that's an incredible thing from people my age. Back and remember the things that I went through to think, who would have ever thought that on every newscast, it seems, when I just scan through my Google search for the news of the day, of course, the algorithm probably is hitting a few more trans things in my direction than most people. But what I'm seeing is this incredible awareness, first of all, of our existence, second, a certain sympathy for our position. And I think, well, what if we got to prove that we exist? If we go to any authoritative source, we run into the DSM, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders. But an intriguing thing is we are no longer listed as having a mental disease. So oftentimes when I read the comments at the bottom of these very nasty comments to articles on transgender stuff, and they say, well, that's because these people are sick and need therapy. My answer is, well, not anymore, because if you look at the DSM, we are no longer listed as having a mental illness, and even if it is young. It used to be identity disorder of young people, of children. They're not considered abnormal either. So the question is, where do we show up in the DSM? And it is, all hinges on this concept of gender dysphoria, which is just a fancy Latin term saying transgender people aren't happy. And why aren't they happy? And then they do studies to say, do they still remain unhappy after the surgery? Well, if they're not happy after the surgery, then somehow or other, then the therapy must be completely contraindicated. Nobody should be getting hormones and nobody should be getting surgeries, because since they're still unhappy, they still have their gender dysphoria, they haven't been cured of the gender dysphoria, well, then we better just drop them clear off the radar screen. And that's my actual fear, is that their mindset might go in that direction. But what they fail to consider is that the reason that transgender people are unhappy is because they have large groups of people making their lives miserable, not hiring them, treating them with disrespect, even little tiny things. I was sitting in the car the other day and some lady came up to me and said, Jesus loves you. And she was trying to be a sweet lady, but I don't think she was walking along the whole line of cars saying, Jesus loves you to everybody. The supposition was, as a transgender person, I must be a sinner. And because I'm a sinner, I needed to be reminded that I should be converted. And then I had some other screwball walk by and take a picture through the car window when I was just talking on the phone. And I said, well, what are you taking my picture for? And he said, well, you were taking my picture. I said, I wasn't taking your picture. I was holding up my phone, talking into it. And so these are the kind of things that most people don't experience. But when they happen to us, who are oftentimes targeted people, we get upset about things like this. We don't want people taking our picture. We don't want people telling us Jesus loves you if we already know that. So it's the temerity of people that step into our lives at an intimate level when we haven't invited them in. So, but let's ask ourselves, what do we mean by dysphoria? It's not something that there's ever going to be a clear-cut test for that. I mean, how unhappy do you have to be before you're clinically unhappy? So that's how tangential our identity is in terms of professional groups recognizing our existence. So if we don't have political recognition, we need to have some kind of medical recognition, because doctors won't treat us if there isn't something wrong.
Yeah, I mean, this is the same Supreme Court that delivered us Roe in 1973. It's the same Supreme Court that overturned Texas sodomy laws 20 years ago. It's the same Supreme Court that gave us gay marriage. I mean, it's also the same Supreme Court that gave us Plessy versus Ferguson. You know, the Supreme Court mm-hmm. can be a force for good, and it can also be a force for evil. I mean, there's decisions that the Supreme Court made that have affected the lives of hundreds of thousands of people and in extremely negative ways, and caused needless death and suffering. And, you know, I mean, the Supreme Court could also be the culmination of a struggle for liberation. Right now, we're living through a time where the Supreme Court is being used as a weapon against us. And the biggest reason for that is that, you know, we basically, the court was gerrymandered during the 2016-2020, you know, presidentials. I mean, during the 43rd president's term, it was basically gerrymandered. I mean, that's just... And, you know, the result of that is laws like, I mean, the right wing feels empowered. The problem is that right now, because of the makeup of the Supreme Court, the right wing feels empowered to just, you know, use its solid leather boot to stomp on the, you know, to stomp on the bodies of transgender people. Nowhere is that worse than in Florida. So what's happening in Florida right now is that transgender adults who have been transgender, they've transitioned for their whole lives, are suddenly facing all of these new burdens that they have to deal with just to live their lives. They have to get mandatory, every 3 months, they have to get mandatory suicide counseling. As if, like, somebody who's been on hormones for the whole reason that you go on hormones is because it helps to affirm your gender identity. They have to get mandatory blood tests every month. They have to go get mandatory, like, evaluative counseling every 6 months. They've thrown all of these obstacles in the way of people who were just living their normal lives, like, mostly in obscurity. Women or nice men just living their lives. And now all of a sudden they have to go through all of these hurdles that have been placed in front of them that didn't used to exist, like just a year ago. It's like, you know, I mean, this is like the kind of thing that the Nazis would invent. I mean, these are like the kind of laws that the Nazis invented for the Jews. They had these Jewish laws that they started working with in the 1930s to make the lives of Jews in Europe just incredibly burdensome. They had to carry around papers. They had to, like, everywhere they go, they have to prove their identity. You know, they couldn't work here. They couldn't work there. And they're doing this right now to transgender people in Florida. I mean, they're throwing so many burdens in front of them. And they're using the medical system to do this. And it's such a misappropriation of the medical system. And it's so against the ethics of how medicine is practiced today. So that's all I wanted to say. So anyways, let's get to your topic, Sheila, because we've been talking about my stuff for most of the show so far. So what did you want to talk about today, Sheila?
Well, I want to go back to the value of words and what words mean. I raised the issue of the gender dysphoria as being our one distinctive characteristic. And I pointed out the danger that if people try to graph that in a chart, they'd say, well, people go through all different causes of dysphoria. How can we parse out the gender dysphoria from just general social dysphoria. What if someone says, your problem isn't that you think you should belong to the other sex, your problem is you're just a very shy person and you have social anxiety disorder. Let's treat that first and see if the gender thing goes away. So see, here's our problem. Our very existence is hanging by a thread. In order to differentiate ourselves and give ourselves the permission to be somewhat workable in the melange of society and have them accept us and understand our experiences, we have to tell our stories. And this is the value of transgender autobiographies. It's the value of books that I tried to write. It's that we try to make our experiences something that people can identify with, that we don't appear to be aliens. And of course, the technique of the other side is precisely that, to make us appear to be the aggressors, the aliens, the weirdos, or people that are mentally ill, or people that are even dangerous. Putting that burden upon our shoulders that we're trying to occupy women's spaces, devalue womanhood, tear apart the family, interfere with parental rights, indoctrinate children with an alien ideology. If they can frame the discourse in that way, then they get to win. If meanwhile we hit our humanity, our common features, the fact that this is a lifelong affliction, that many of us felt this very early on and continue
to feel it throughout our lifetime. I object to the word affliction. There's nothing that's an affliction about being transgender. Being transgender
whenever we speak of dysphoria, we're speaking about something that is
I don't talk about dysphoria. I don't agree with the term dysphoria. I don't believe in dysphoria. I believe that transgender people are just people and that they're transgender. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that.
Unfortunately, dysphoria is the only thing that gives us medical standing right now. It's the only thing that appears in the DSM. So what we have to acknowledge is that I'm a rebel.
The whole point of it is that we don't need that. We don't need medical standing, Sheila. Why do we need medical standing to be who we are?
In order to get a prescription or to have a doctor operate and have it not be mutilation, as the other side keeps saying,
it's not mutilation.
The only way we can have that is
how is that different from plastic surgery? Do people call plastic surgery mutilation?
When a woman goes in to get plastic surgery,
do you call that mutilation? No, it's just plastic
surgery.
No,
of course not. I don't, but understand that because of the way the medical profession is set up,
when a woman takes hormones after she's gone past menopause, I mean, do we consider that to be bizarre or there's something wrong about that? No, they're just taking hormones. Hormones are tools.
So let me ask you this. Why is a doctor allowed to prescribe hormones for someone who has gone through menopause? Why is he allowed to do that?
For her health.
Exactly. If she doesn't do it, what happens is sometimes bone loss, sometimes mental mood swings, but whatever it is to treat a condition. So when I say affliction, that isn't
But why can't we just say transgender? Why can't we just say that transgender is just a thing? It's a human thing. We don't have to medicalize it. We don't have to say it's dysphoria. We don't have to say it's an affliction.
Social institutions are set up according to parameters that we don't control. That's why.
Well, it would be
wonderful if transgender people could have everything we want, but we can't. And see, I'm a rebel. I'm a street rebel from early on. But one of the things I learned in life by being a street level person is what costs when other people can use professional discourse to stomp you out if they want to. And they can do it. And the reason that they can do it is they know the lingo, they know the dance, they know the game. And if we want to survive in this world, we have to be smart enough to understand what we're up against. And that's why
a lot of us are.
But one of it is to respect various nomenclatures. Now, here's what I think is sad in America today. America has lost what I call a common ground of discourse. We don't agree. It's almost impossible to debate, even you and me tonight, understanding and everything about and being on the same side. Even we would have a temporary problem with shades of meaning using of words and what the effects are. Well this is okay. What I mean by we have to be smarter than the opposition. And because of that, we
That's
also have
to
have our guard up.
I object to the word affliction.
I'll totally concede that.
What if we looked at it from this way, though? What if we looked at it like this? People just have bodies. They have different kinds of bodies. They have fat bodies. They have skinny bodies. They have female bodies. They have male bodies. People just have different kinds of bodies. And we're just trying to get to the body that fits us, right? I mean, that's such an easier way of looking at it. It's not really medicalizing it. It's looking at it from the perspective of bodies.
No. I understand that as an ideal, but in the real world, and this is what I always come back to, in the real world, the world is set up in various power structures, and the power structures have very elaborate rules that determine when you even get to open your mouth, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's times when the most natural response for a transgender person is just to stand on the street corner and scream, but it isn't going to help us any. In other words, our own anxiety and our own anger and indignation is great in when we support each other in that frustration that we feel and the sense of hurt that we've experienced all our lives. But that gender dysphoria once in a while we'll meet a sympathetic ear, and we hope that the one good news that we have, which I always like to leave on a positive note, is that more people are sympathetic to us today than have ever been there before. They're starting to get us. They're starting to understand. But a lot of people don't. And they are finding ways to co-opt discourses and use it in a very cunning way to be able to squeeze us into little boxes. Nobody has rights permanently. It's always an ebb and flow. People gain rights, they lose them. Society improves, it deteriorates. There's periods of peace, there's periods of war.
We definitely have something to say here. First I want to just put in a PSA. You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. We're having a discussion tonight. I'm Emma Lugo, and this is Sheila. And we're just talking about current events and how they're affecting transgender folks. So, Sheila, after you're done with that, why don't we get back to talking about some more current events?
Well, the current events are not so much new as being just a little bit more sophisticated and a little bit more regional than they used to be. There are certain regions in the country right now that are not trans friendly, and there's other regions of the country that are. So the question is for various people, whether they're families with transgender kids, or whether they are trans kids in college, or whether they are trans people that are already in living their 20s, their 30s, their 40s, 50s, or beyond. The question is, where do you want to live? Who do you want to be with? And how can you protect yourself so that you increase the number of rights you do possess and understand the rights you don't possess? In the perfect world, everybody would be nice to everybody else all the time, and every place you go would be safe. But since those things are not true, we have to be able to say, how do I navigate my life? How do I navigate around obstacles? How do I protect myself and make myself safe? and how can I find places that will not add to my past sad memories, if I have any, and will increase my chances of having a happier and more productive life. When trans people do that, right, they win.
So one of the one of the things that you bring up, I think that we should maybe discuss in a little, but, well, we've only got about 10 minutes left in the show, but one of the things that you bring up that we've mentioned at least a couple of times on the show in the last month or two is that over 20 states have passed laws which are basically completely limiting rights for transgender kids. And so parents are being faced with very real decisions about what are they going to do about their transgender kids who have come out to them, because their states, there's over 20 states now in this country where if you're a transgender kid, you may not be able to have access to gender affirming care, you may not be able to use the restrooms or the changing facilities, you may not be in a place where people are even obligated to even try to gender you correctly. A lot of these laws are based on this idea that these kids are misguided and that they don't know what they're doing. But the ironic thing is that a lot of these kids, they live in families where their parents are very loving and they're totally accepting of them and they are supportive of them and their transgender identities. And these kids are suddenly having to bear the full burden of this hate legislation, this terrible 500 different laws that have been passed around the country, almost all of them specifically targeting transgender kids. And it's like, my question for you, Sheila, is what kind of a society punishes kids? What kind of a society, like, the parents accept them, they love them, they nurture them, they say, yeah, we love our transgender kid, but the government wants to punish the kid. What kind of a society punishes kids? What do you think, Sheila?
Okay, here's my thoughts on that. I've listened to a lot of these presentations because I make it a point to listen to people that I disagree with so I understand how their minds work. And the way that they think is that the kids are being mutilated, the kids are being forced to make decisions that they will
that
regret.
That's
in
a terrible
the future.
Word. That's so offensive, isn't it?
This is what they say about us.
Yeah. So, thanks, Sheila. So part of what's going on is that these families, unfortunately, I mean, they are fighting back. That's true. They are fighting back, but they're also fleeing because, you know, I mean, there's only a short window of time in which you've got a kid in the first place. And if you've got a kid who's like 12 or 13 years old, you might be in for fighting, you know, but you're also just as likely to say, hey, I need my kid to survive. And so what we're going to do is we're going to move to Oregon. We're going to move to Colorado. We're going to move to Minnesota. We're going to move to New York. I mean, these kids and their families are leaving states like Utah. They're leaving states like Idaho, and they're coming to Oregon. I mean, there's this huge in-migration right now that's happening in this country of mostly trans families, you know, not just kids, but entire families, because of these new laws. And it's like, this is the work of the next 20 years. This is like, for the next generation or maybe two generations, we're going to be fighting this battle. And this all goes back to the Supreme Court, which is kind of how we opened our show. I mean, the reason that these situations are, because up until like 3 or 4 years ago, things were moving along really smoothly for us. You know, we were slowly getting at a slow advance in our rights. We were getting our rights in the schools. We were getting our rights in medical facilities. We were getting our rights in insurance. And most importantly, we were getting accepted by the public. And the Supreme Court has turned things around so that now these conservative states feel empowered to just do blatant discrimination against us. And to push a cultural message, which basically wants to push us back into the closet. But, you know, you and I, we're both fighters, Sheila. We're not going to let anybody push us into the closet. So, and I think that most transgender people are the same way. No, nobody's going back into any closet.
Well, let me tell you a little time capsule thing. When I came out, and I did it in Tacoma, Seattle area, I was probably at the very first support group that there was for any trans people. And this was, there were about five people in the room. There were three cross-dressers and I think two transsexuals, and then there was me. And it was in a little building right off of Broadway and Pike and Pine area. And if I wanted to find out about transsexualism, I had to look up in books in print because there was no Amazon. And they had about four books on anything having to do with cross-dressing whatsoever. And nothing on transsexuals at all, except for Harry Benjamin's book that came out in 1966. And Robert Stoller, who was against transgender existence, and later on Janice Raymond, her book, The Transsexual Empire. So there was nothing there, no internet. If you called the plastic surgeon, they'd say there'd be a deadness on the line while they, and then you'd say, oh, we don't treat that kind of thing, was what I would hear. And there were the handful of gender clinics around the country. People would go clear down to Morocco or to Tijuana to get their surgeries under conditions that, who knows how they were in those days, you know. To hear where it used to be, as bad as it may seem right now, the fact that is we're mentioned in the State of the Union speech and we're mentioned in things like this, we have a visibility and a hope for the future that's so much more beyond where I came from and where I've been my whole life, when there was no understanding and where you couldn't even mention this, where you could be barred from shopping malls, period, for simply appearing in cross-gender attire. They just say, you're never allowed to come back here, period. This is private property. That's the world I come from. And that's the world I was familiar with.
Thank you, Sheila. That is a great reminder. I just want to say that the fact that we've come so far is part of why they're pushing so hard against us right now. And so it's great to be reminded that, like, the world that they want to push us back into, that you, like, just like you said, Sheila, maybe from the 1950s, maybe from the 1920s, is the world that we have left behind in the dust. And the fact that there's so many of us, and we're so numerous, and we're so in everywhere in society, we're like, you know, I mean, we're everywhere. And I think that's the most positive thing that we can close on, is just remembering that we are everywhere. We've come so far, you know, and your words have helped to remind us of how far we've come. So would you like to say any closing statements, Sheila, before we wrap up the show?
Well, just to always leave people with hope, no matter what, where they go in their transition or over the course of a whole lifetime, I've always been very cautious my own self, because I've always had to balance a lot of different factors in my own transition of how far to go and under what conditions and keeping a plan B ready. And yet at the same time to be very edgy and very out there and to pay that price for that. I've had people throw rocks at me, spit on me. I've had unbelievable things that have happened in my life. And the value of that is that I can tell people that, having been there and having seen it from all sides, I also understand that being transgender is part of the human condition. I don't know anybody in life, and I hear it on the news every day with revolutions in countries and wars and all kinds of stuff. I realize how precious it is that I can even be sitting here broadcasting and realizing that people are out there to hear me is astonishing. I would never have thought, locked into my own cranium for most of my life in loneliness, that I would ever have that opportunity. So for anybody feeling lonely tonight, it's important to know that there are friends out there, there is support out there. Grab a hold of it. Don't bite off more than you can chew, and be good to yourself, because you need to do that. So those are my little thoughts tonight.
Thank you so much, Sheila. It's been a real pleasure talking with you, as always. We've been talking tonight with Sheila. And my name is Emma. You've been listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. And we've just been talking about current events and, you know, trying to figure out ways to support and to survive in these times. So thanks so much for joining us on Transpositive. In 2 weeks, we'll be talking with a physician from OHSU who specializes in transgender surgeries. Thanks again for joining us. Thank you, Sheila, for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks, everyone. Good night.
Okay.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks, McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the US.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your coworkers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing for discriminatory bills,
know this, these bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host of Transpositive, and I'm also the current president of the board of directors here at KBOO. At KBOO, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KBOO want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KBOO supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio. Bedroom surprise.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Tune in to KBOO on Monday, August 7th from 7 to 8 p.m. for a live remote broadcast of Rising Up, the Power of Narrative in Pursuing Racial Justice. Journalist, author, and radio host Sonali Kolhatkar will be joined in conversation with Yvette Dion, author and executive director at Yes Magazine at Powell City of Books in Portland. The discussion will focus on racial justice perspectives in news media, entertainment, and individual discourse. Again, that's Rising Up, the Power of Narrative in Pursuing Racial Justice on Monday, August 7th from 7 to 8 p.m. broadcasting from Powell City of Books here on KBOO Community Radio 90.7.